Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. For the second day in a row and the third time in a week, U.S. fighter jets shot something down. CBS's Tom Foti has details.
On the orders of the Canadian Prime Minister, a joint command U.S. jet shot down yet another flying object. This about a day after another still unidentified device shoot down off the coast of Alaska and a week after the Chinese balloon.
We still don't have much information about either downed device. Rescuers are still pulling people from rubble nearly a week after a massive earthquake hit Turkey and Syria. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is head of the World Health Organization.
People are exposed to other health problems, especially mental health problems. So we will work together in order to address the impact of this.
The quakes killed more than 28,000 people so far. Millions are homeless. A state of emergency has been declared in New Zealand as Cyclone Gabrielle makes landfall. Phil Mercer's with the BBC.
Weather forecasters are warning that this wild weather in the Northland region of New Zealand is just the beginning. And if you look more closely at the weather warnings and the forecast for the next few days, severe gales, heavy rain, and very dangerous surf conditions are forecast.
The cyclone comes just 2 weeks after a record-breaking storm swamped the nation's largest city and killed four people. For the sixth week in a row, tens of thousands of Israelis hit the streets to protest judicial plans by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government. This woman was among them.
We are going out to the streets to say no, no for dictatorship.
The government says judges and legal advisors have way too much sway there. Warming temperatures are causing big concerns for maple syrup producers. Here's CBS's Jim Krasula.
Gary Bielek says
it's as early as we've ever tapped.
Climate change and warmer weather are trouble for Bielek's maple trees near Erie, Pennsylvania.
Even if we had this time of year had this warm spell, normally we'd be saying we're going to get cold next week and we'll be frozen for 2 or 3 weeks yet. There's no reason to tap. Well, that's not true anymore.
Bielek worries about the future for maple syrup producers as temperatures generally warm.
The Chiefs and Eagles are set to make history today at the Super Bowl. Here's CBS's Chris Van Cleef.
Super Bowl 57 will mark the first time both teams are led by black quarterbacks. For the Eagles' Jalen Hurts, it's also his first Super Bowl.
I see it as an opportunity to honor everyone that has come before me.
The guys that came before me and Jalen set the stage for this, and now I'm just glad that we can kind of set the stage for guys that are kids that are coming up now.
Jason and Travis Kelce will be the first brothers to play on opposing teams in a Super Bowl.
Mama Kelce says she's cheering for both of them equally. This is CBS News.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation related, and Brewing says it's badly needed as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rowe says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold,
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on the Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning and welcome. This is our weekend review, our analysis, our discussion of the most important stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so much for spending some portion of your Saturday morning with me and my wonderful producer, Kelvin. We are here in the studios of WAUK Radio in downtown Waukesha. It's the Shaw, 540 AM, 101 FM. This broadcast, other broadcasts of Civic Media here in Waukesha, southeastern Wisconsin, and throughout the state of Wisconsin. Delighted once again to have you with me and with Kelvin here this morning on Saturday, February 11th, 2023. My name is Jim Santel, and today, as always, we have an ambitious but nonetheless achievable and informative, hopefully also inspiring program for you this morning, covering lots and lots of territory, including some special features this morning, some special notes about things coming up this hour, next hour, and then in the broadcasts ahead into the month of March as well. Stay tuned for all of that as well. This morning, as we always do, we're going to be asking questions about what happened. What are the basic facts of the stories that we're talking about? Why is it important? Why should I care? Why should we be concerned about these stories in our American life and our livelihood? And then what should we do about those things? If there is something to engage in, what is that activity? What is that next action that we should be taking? What happened? Why is it important? And what should we do about it? Thank you once again for joining me this morning in our discussion of those stories of law, government, and justice in these United States of America. We begin with a programming note about something very special coming up in later this month and then also into March. February 25th, March 4th, and March 11th, all three dates, I know they're already on your calendars for Morning Cannolis. Our presentations those mornings, special presentations, it is approximately halfway through, believe it or not, the present term, the 2022-2023 term of the United States Supreme Court. We've seen that they've been active in October, November, December, January, and this month of February. As they head into the halfway mark of this term of the United States Supreme Court, we're going to pause in some of our up-to-date contemporary news analysis and go back to the Supreme Court and talk about the things that they have been engaged in these first 6 months. So sort of a check on where they have been, what they've been doing up to this point, and then also looking forward, of course, a short 4 months from now, probably May, June, arguably into July, announcements by the Supreme Court of some of their major decisions, many of which we have highlighted in the fall of last year. We visit some of those and talk then about predictions for the future. The three components of those upcoming broadcasts, those special recorded broadcasts on February 25th, March 4th, and 11th, three basic components. We're going to go back and do some basic civics work again, how the courts work, how they function, their operations, a little bit of structure, a little bit about the federal courts generally, because that is animated. I know lots of the great questions that you have had, callers have called in to talk about. Second, we're going to talk about one or two, maybe even three cases in our contemporary experience here in America, things that have defined who we are as a nation, how we live, how we go about living our lives, two or three cases that continue to have an impact upon us every single day of our lives. And third, some major stories, again, news stories in the life of America, the lives of Supreme Court justices and their activity and their engagements having to do with ethics rules. We know that recently the Congress has introduced some legislation. We'll see how far it goes to establish specific rules on the behavior, the conduct of Supreme Court justices. We'll talk about that a bit. We know that this all happens in the wake of the release almost a year ago now of the Dobbs decision, ultimately decided in June of last year, overruling Roe versus Wade, establishing perhaps a new course of conduct in the area of privacy rights for America. And also we're going to talk about the demeanor, the conduct of justices sort of on the bench, but also importantly off the bench, which has also been the focus of a lot of reporting, the speeches that they give, the comments they make in interviews. So lots of contemporary stories about the Supreme Court, but again, focusing about halfway through their present term, those broadcasts again coming up on February 25th, March 4th, and March 11th. Tune in for those, that special programming note this week. As we always do on Morning Cannolis, including this morning, February 11th, I'm going to spend a little bit of time in this first segment talking about today in history, things that happened in the history of our nation and our world on this day in history, February 11th. Let's begin way back in 1753 in our own nation. Believe it or not, it was on this day, February 11th in 1753, the first organized, known, identified hospital that we'd identify as a hospital opened in Pennsylvania, began admitting patients on this day, not surprisingly at all, co-founded by one of our founding fathers in our nation, his name, of course, Benjamin Franklin, thus the starting of that hospital in Pennsylvania, 1753. Let's jump way ahead to 1975. Again, another item, another news item from our history in the general area of progress, movement forward in mankind for all of us. This was the day in 1975 that British politician, a woman named Margaret Thatcher, was elected to the leadership of the Conservative Party in the United Kingdom. She was replacing Edward Heath, who had been the prime minister at that time, the head of that Conservative Party in Great Britain. And 4 years later, in 1979, Margaret Thatcher, as you all well know, would become the first woman prime minister, the first female prime minister on the European continent, that happening in 1979. But on this day, February 11th, 1975, she became the leader of the Conservative Party, again, anticipating her rise to power at the head of the UK government in 1979. 1990, more movement forward in America, movement forward around the world, including especially in South Africa. After serving 27 years, over a quarter century in prison, a man named Nelson Mandela, his name rings, of course, civil rights, human rights in all of our ears. Nelson Mandela was finally released by the apartheid government in South Africa on this day, February 11th in 1990. It was after that release, and of course he became, not only during his time in prison, but even before that, certainly after that, a major rallying figure for the overthrow, the dismantling of apartheid in South Africa. And sure enough, pursuant to his commitments made in writing, made even orally while he was in prison there in South Africa, he began negotiations after his release, almost within the hours of his release on February 11th of 1990, with the president of South Africa. His name, you may recall, F.W. de Klerk, who again was the last major leader in South Africa, presiding over the horrific non-human rights, anti-civil rights policy and practice of apartheid, separating the races according to race in all things, including housing, including economics, including arts, including athletics, all the kinds of things, commerce, business, everything. Apartheid. Nelson Mandela, of course, as you all well know, would go on to be successful in overthrowing that and ultimately becoming the leader of the South African nation. But today, 27 years ago, he was released finally from prison after almost a quarter century in custody. And finally, also moving forward in the history of America, it was today, February 11th, that Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak stepped down after nearly 30 years in power, the head of the Egyptian government. You may recall that that was following some mass demonstrations that were part of a pro-democracy uprising in Egypt, and then it spread to other nations in northern Africa, throughout the Middle East as well, known as the Arab Spring, that happening, of course, in 2011. As a result of those nationwide protests, Hosni Mubarak stepping down after nearly 30 years in a position of power there in Egypt. As we know as well, the Arab Spring did not live up to all of its promise in terms of overthrowing the anti-democratic powers in Egypt and in other nations. That is a struggle still continuing to this day on February 11th, 2023. All those things, however, signs of movement forward, signs of progress in our national and our international history. We will look forward to more of that as we continue this morning and down the road in our discussion of the major stories in law, in government, and in the aspiration for justice in America. All those things happening on February 11th in years past. Another program note, another thing that we note happened just this past week. Program note and a passing of two people. One of them involving a point of personal preference that I'm going to be pursuing in the last segment of our second hour coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. This past Wednesday, two people died. One of them is named Burt Bacharach. Another one's name is Bill Hotz, whose name you may not recall, but I'm going to talk a lot about him in our final segment in the second hour this morning on Morning Cannolis. Let's talk right now a little bit about Burt Bacharach, who died this past Wednesday. He lived from May 12th of 1928 until February 8th of this year. All of you, I suspect, young and older, know well Burt Bacharach, American composer, a songwriter, a record producer, and a pianist as well. Widely regarded as one of the most important and influential figures of 20th century popular music. You may think, well, gee, what does that have to do with news about government and law and justice in America? In many ways, Burt Bacharach's music was the music of the 1950s, the 1960s, the 1970s, when, in fact, we did make some great progress in the area of civil rights and movement forward here in my lifetime, in the lifetime, I suspect, of many of you as well. And so we celebrate his life, composed hundreds of pop songs in the late 1950s, again, animated some of those movements to this day, many of those in collaboration with a fellow named Hal David. His music characterized by those of you who are musicians, some chord progressions that were sort of atypical, influenced by jazz harmonies, received accolades, 3 Academy Awards, 6 Grammy Awards, an Emmy Award, 1961 to 1972. Many of Bacharach's and David's hits were written specifically for a great song stylist still with us named Dionne Warwick, and early associations with everybody from Perry Como and subsequent with people like Dusty Springfield and Jackie DeShannon, Bobby Gentry, Tom Jones, Herb Alpert, B.J. Thomas, The Carpenters, among many other artists known to us well. Gene McDaniels, Marty Robbins, Jerry Butler, also among those in the 1960s, the 1970s, the 1980s, and even the 1990s, continuing almost until the time of his death just this past Wednesday in our own history. And as we go out, we're going to talk more about Burt Bacharach and hear his music as well.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. High of 48 this afternoon, under clear skies, southwesterly winds, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows around 29 tonight. Mainly sunny skies and calm tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 48. Temperatures well above average Tuesday and Wednesday, with highs from the mid-40s to the upper 40s. Chance for scattered showers Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Again, the music of Burt Bacharach, who passed away this past week after leaving a legacy of amazing music in my lifetime, in your lifetime, and animated much of the movements forward in the areas of civil rights and human rights in America, off in the backdrop, the music of our times. Burt Bacharach celebrated this morning in our broadcast. We are here at the studios of WAUK Radio in the Shaw in downtown Waukesha, along with my terrific producer who is with me in those studios. We are taking your phone calls this hour and also next hour. That number is 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Calvin and I will be delighted to take your phone calls to solicit, to obtain, to respond to your thoughts, your questions, and your inquiries about the major news stories we're going to talk about in this hour and next hour as well. So let's begin that ambitious but achievable, informative, and inspiring syllabus, our agenda for this morning. I'm going to begin in a federal district court in Texas, where we often talk about cases, many things coming out of Texas, as you well know. A Texas lawsuit, again, spent in the federal district court in Texas, brought by some conservative groups seeking to overturn a Food and Drug Administration approval of a drug called mifepristone in 2000. Mifepristone, rather, is a widely used abortion drug. And this federal lawsuit, which is going to be decided, was assigned to the courtroom of a fellow named Matthew Kaczmarek. He is a federal district court judge in Texas. In the coming weeks, he promised a decision on it yesterday, but decided at the end of the court proceedings yesterday not to issue that decision because he wanted to involve others in offering suggestions, offering their insights into what he should do. The lawsuit itself, as I said, filed by some conservative groups, including a group called the Alliance Defending Freedom, generally known as a faith-based organization that has long sought to have abortion law outlawed nationwide, beginning way back in 1973 with the decision Roe versus Wade, a very active group around the country, including in the state of Texas. And again, focusing on this drug called mifepristone, if successful in this lawsuit, would attempt to ban that drug nationwide, even in states where abortion remains legal after the United States Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade just last June, in this major landmark case that we have talked a lot about called Dobbs. Mifepristone, again, the FDA approved that in way back in 2000, the year 2000, 23 years. It's often paired with another drug, which is called misoprostol. It's used to induce abortion without the need for a surgical procedure. This lawsuit, again, was filed by the Alliance Defending Freedom, along with about four doctors who have treated patients with the drug. Their argument in the midst of this federal lawsuit is that using mifepristone comes with some medical risks. And in particular, one of the attorneys for the Alliance Defending Freedom has said this. He said, our frontline doctors have firsthand experience in treating and caring for the women and girls, he said, harmed by these drugs. We hope the court holds that the FDA should be accountable for recklessly approving these harmful drugs without following law and science. Now, needless to say, there is opposition to that view, not only by the defendants in this case, but also by many others, thus the judge soliciting more argument, more positions, statements of position by other people out there. And sure enough, one of those, the vice president of Planned Parenthood of America, has said this: mifepristone is safe, it's effective, and has been used by more than 5 million people since the FDA approved it more than 20 years ago. Goes on to say, this case, again, this federal lawsuit pending in the federal district court in Texas, trying to stop the distribution, the FDA authorization of this abortion drug. This case is a politically motivated attack to remove mifepristone from the market, which could have far-reaching consequences for patients' access to abortion nationwide and to other FDA-approved medications. That, again, a statement by Planned Parenthood, not surprisingly, opposing this request to the federal court to stop the distribution of this abortion drug and effectively overturn a 23-year-old ruling found by the FDA after lots of examination of the effects of this drug. In 2020, about 50%, about 51% or so of abortions are induced using this medication, the mifepristone, according to data from the Centers for Disease Control. Now, the lawsuit, of course, gives people a lot to talk about, not only in the wake of the overturning of Roe versus Wade way back in June of last year. It seems like a long time ago. It has only been, again, about 9 months or so since that happened. Obviously, the Supreme Court opening up the doors nationwide to further discussion and, importantly, legislation, some referendums around the country about whether or not, in particular states, the privacy right to abortion, long recognized for nearly 50 years, 49 years, should be acknowledged by the states. And therefore, today we have not only this emerging, but this present pattern of patchwork around the nation, places where you can, in fact, get an abortion legally, places where it is increasingly illegal to get an abortion. So the lawsuit, again, coming out of Texas, this gives people a lot of focus, not only in those other states, but in the state of Texas and throughout the United States of America, because of the possible impact of the decision by the judge, probably forthcoming in the next couple of weeks, finding whether or not the FDA approval of mifepristone was proper or not. The lawsuit, again, was very rare because it is rare that there's litigation against a federal agency for a decision made almost a quarter century ago. But significantly, this is not the first time that there has been a question about whether this drug, mifepristone, should have been approved. There have been investigations and documentation that the FDA has regulated the drug pretty closely. And that's a part of our record, presumably a part of the record as well. And so we're going to talk more about that particular case, the impact of it, what's going on, why it's important for you to know about that as we come back here right after this first break here in Morning Cannolis.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. The military shot down another unidentified object, this time over Canadian airspace. CBS's Tom Foti.
Just about one day after the U.S. shot something down near Alaska, it did it again, part of the joint U.S.-Canadian NORAD command. We don't know much yet about either downed device.
This one was flying about 100 miles from the Alaska-Canada border. Damage from last week's 7.8 magnitude earthquake in Turkey and Syria is devastating and widespread. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus is head of the World Health Organization.
Water supplies have been affected and
other services have been affected.
More than 28,000 people have died. For the first time ever, two brothers are playing on opposing teams at the Super Bowl. Their proud mom, Donna Kelsey.
To go from high school to college, college to the pros, and then to both be in the Super Bowl together, it's like, what are the odds on that?
Kickoff's 9 hours away. CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms.
Yeah. Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
We have a full hour with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley.
Yes, thank you for having me. So glad to be in studio.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
You know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whether you are a union member or a business owner, picking up your garbage has no partisan lines. Making sure people can get to and from work shouldn't have partisan lines.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on The Shaw.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on The Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Wants to remind a Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Wants to remind a Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Remember the last time your family visited the forest? It's a place of wonder and imagination for the whole family, where stories come to life, and it's closer than you think. Ready to plan your next visit? Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Morning. We are talking the first of our major news stories pending in America. We're talking about this lawsuit that has been pending in a federal district court in Texas before a U.S. District Judge whose name is Matthew Kaczmarek. He is a judge who has previously issued opinions that have not been sympathetic to privacy rights and abortion rights. Right before the break, I was talking about the fact that this particular drug called mifepristone, has been the subject of an awful lot of review, an awful lot of examination throughout the last 22 or so years. Government Accountability Office, sometimes called the GAO, had a report some years ago, almost 60 pages in length, that went through everything that the FDA has done initially, when it took a look at this drug initially, and then since that time. In fact, during the course of its review of the efficacy, the productiveness of this drug, it, in fact, turned down mifepristone's application twice before approving it. So this is not at all a story of hasty approval by the FDA of this abortion drug. It's a story, just to the contrary, of a pretty long process that was involved, had a lot of different moving pieces administratively, and certainly premised upon the medicine, the facts, the science, which is what we always should be focusing on when making these important decisions. So the idea, which is implicit in this lawsuit, But the FDA acted rashly and outside of its powers in weighing that evidence is simply belied by the evidence. And I think that the decision to file in this court, again, where Judge Kaczmarek has in the past issued opinions that have been hostile to privacy rights, abortion rights in particular, this decision to file this lawsuit there is very purposeful. And again, the question is, if indeed in the next couple of weeks, which he probably will do, he issues an opinion on this, what is the impact of that here in Wisconsin and throughout our nation? Well, a lot of it depends upon what kind of injunction the court may enter. Of course, he's got the capacity not to enter any injunction at all. Predictable, given his history and given his focus on this lawsuit up to this point, that he will be doing something in this area. So if the judge issues a nationwide injunction, which again sounds stunning, I know, that a single federal judge in Texas, essentially the court would have ruled that mifepristone was not appropriately approved by the FDA and should be taken off the market. That's why this lawsuit is so very, very important. Again, as an outgrowth, plainly, of the decision in Dobbs of last June, in the wake of the overturning of Roe versus Wade, this tremendous affirmation back in 1973 of the privacy right, reproductive rights at the time. Now, the FDA, after such a decision, could reinstate it, do some administrative things to put this back on the market, but that would plainly require some time and some initiative, which the FDA plainly does have. In addition to that, while this case is being litigated, presumably also taken up on appeal, the FDA would also be doing other things to look at its authorities in this area. Almost certainly, depending upon what the lower court, the district court judge, does in this case, there'll be an appeal. And where does that go? That goes to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, because Texas is one of those three states in the Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, also including, of course, Louisiana and Mississippi. That Fifth Circuit, as you well know from having been a part of this program on Saturday mornings and many others here on the broadcasts of civic media and in other media outlets, Fifth Circuit has its own track record for the decision-making that is not appropriately, not necessarily sympathetic to abortion rights. And although we don't know exactly what may happen before an appeals panel of that bench, the Fifth Circuit, highly likely that if Judge Kaczmarek issues an injunction preventing the FDA from continuing to support the nationwide use of this drug, that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals would support that, perhaps ultimately headed to the United States Supreme Court. A significant decision pending right now, no decision yet made. Anticipate that sometime in the next two, maybe three, maybe 4 weeks or so, we're going to get a decision out of that district court affecting, once again, not only this fundamental access to reproductive rights, but also the manner in which abortion rights are implemented and observed in this nation, including right here in Wisconsin. That's the reason why it's important. That's the reason why we should all know about this. Continuing to be vigilant, both here in Wisconsin and in other places with our elected, our appointed representatives, to ensure that this fundamental notion, privacy rights, as we talked before, not just in the area of reproductive rights, but certainly that has been at the top of the list, but in many, many other areas of our lives. And of course, we recall well that in the decision in Dobbs back in June, the Supreme Court said, we're stopping here. We're not rolling back other privacy rights. One Supreme Court Justice, Clarence Thomas, plainly saying, well, we shouldn't do that. Let's relook at other areas, including the rights to marry, including the right to contraceptives, other areas like that, LGBTQIA rights. Likewise, he's suggesting that we revisit all of those issues when it comes to identifying a fundamental privacy right for all Americans. Plainly something that we should be advocating for locally, throughout our state systems, and also nationwide. That's what you do in the midst of these kinds of lawsuits around our nation. Let's return then to a common discussion that we have had, and that is matters related to January 6th and the insurrection at that time on our United States Capitol, the attempt to overthrow our government at that time. We know that there continue to be these prosecutions
by the United States Department of Justice of thousands of people out there, some of them already convicted and sentenced to terms of imprisonment in excess of 10 years. We'll talk about one of those in just a moment or so. Let's begin with one of those particular prosecutions coming out of that prosecution initiative, and that is that just this past week, in a federal district court, this one in the District of Columbia, a fellow named Kevin Seafried, who was 53 years old, was sentenced to 36 months in prison for his involvement in January 6th. And the reason for that significant decision this past week, the sentencing of him, is you may recall that Seafried was among those who was found guilty way back in June of last year, entering a restricted building, namely the United States Capitol building, disorderly conduct, and also unlawful parading at that time. He brought his son along at the time, his son Hunter, also charged for partaking in the riot. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison last year. The Seafrieds had traveled to Washington, D.C., as had thousands of others, to attend then-President Trump's Stop the Steal rally. We have talked about that a lot. Near the White House, on the Ellipse on January 6th, prosecutors in the context of these two Seafried cases had said that this particular defendant, Kevin Seafried, among the first protesters to breach the Capitol, to go into the building violently. He entered through a broken window and remained there for about 25 minutes or so. He was photographed a short time later in a fairly iconic picture that we've seen in the news, carrying a Confederate flag. According to the court documents, the positions articulated by the federal government in this matter, he said he brought the flag from his home in Delaware, where it had usually hung outside. Again, this Confederate flag brought inside our nation's Capitol building, our place of tremendous importance historically, and the People's House, the place of legislation. According to testimony from a U.S. police officer, Eugene Goodman, who we've heard about in other settings, Seafried was among a group of rioters who asked him and yelled at Goodman and others, "Where the members at?" And they then turned to Goodman saying, "What are you going to do, shoot us?" Goodman talked about his confrontation with Seafried at that time, described him probably diplomatically, probably a wild understatement, said that Seafried was the complete opposite of pleasant, and said that he had used the Confederate flag to jab him. That is, the police officer saying he was jabbed by the very Confederate flag that Seafried had brought in with him. And so prosecutors in this case alleged and proved, established by virtue of the conviction and now the sentencing, that Seafried had thrust the butt of his flagpole at Officer Goodman, not only a weapon capable of causing some serious injury plainly, but also affixed to it, brandished by a man standing at the front of a very volatile, a growing mob that was assembled there. So again, this past week, this fellow sentenced to 3 years, 36 months in prison, joins the ranks of now something in excess of 1,000 people, in addition to the others likewise responsible for the January 6th insurrection, the assault on our democracy. I'm going to take some phone calls right now about some of the things we've talked about this morning already, maybe other issues as well. Dick, you're calling in from Madison. Dick, appreciate your time this morning, your thought or your comment here on Morning Cannolis.
Hello?
Yes, Dick, we're ready for you and love to have you on
the
program here this morning. Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Sorry. To January 6th and Merrick Garland, you know, you've heard me kind of rail on him from time to time, and I think he's moving way too slow. But one thing I will give him credit for is he's reestablished tremendous credibility in the department again, almost overly done when he's treatment of the former president. But I think what maybe he needs to understand, far be it for me to tell him this, but he's never going to make everyone happy. And he seems to want to do that. And being attorney general of the country, I think you're going to make people unhappy no matter what the call is.
It comes with
the job. But at least make the call.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I just don't understand. It seems to me that he thinks that he's going to make everyone happy. And he's not going to make anyone happy if he just sits on this completely on one side. And then on the other side, we know it could happen as well. But just to sit on it, I don't get it.
Right. And Dick, very, very good point to make. I was a prosecutor for about 30 years, including about 6.5 as the U.S. attorney for eastern Wisconsin, our easternmost part of our state. And on a regular basis, when we made decisions not only about who to prosecute, obviously, through the grand jury, decisions made in trials, in pleas, in sentences, even on appeals to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, on a routine basis, I and others, my colleagues in the U.S. Attorney's Office, my colleagues throughout the U.S. Department of Justice, routinely attacked, offered to also appropriately, right? That's the First Amendment. That's our freedom of speech in America to express our views. But that comes with the territory, as Dick, you're just saying, and that is a part of what happens whenever you make important decisions. I would offer, in addition, Dick, that what should guide this attorney general, and I believe it does, I share your concern about some of the delay as we begin to approach March 1 now of 2023. This is getting a bit late in terms of decision-making through the special counsel, Jack Smith and others. But the important focus of the attorney general, of a Jack Smith, of all the members of the employment team of the Department of Justice, including federal agencies like the FBI and the DEA and ATF, all of it has to be on one thing, and that is service to America and the people like you, Dick, and others, and also the promotion of the rule of law. Those two things are the same. And if you keep your eyes always on what the facts can show and what they establish in criminal cases, of course, beyond a reasonable doubt, what the law prescribes, what the law prohibits, and you join those two things together, you bring the facts to the law, and you make a decision not based upon partisan animus, partisan motivation at all, not politically, but based upon what that does, then in the end, you accomplish justice. Dick, very good point, well made, and this notion once again that in America, tough decisions also bring with them some public criticism. That also a part of who we are as our nation. Thanks so much for the call, the observation. We also have Jake on the line this morning, way from California, I think. Jake, glad to have you with us. Your comment or question?
I just want to comment on this part of the story that you read about the Confederate flag flying traitor, okay, who said, "What are you going to do, shoot me?" Talk about white privilege. But we all know what would have happened on January 6th had the rioters been, a different color, or had they not been a bunch of pro-Trump, toothless, inbred hillbillies from the South carrying Confederate flags and swastika flags and urinating and defecating in the Capitol, destroying the Capitol, looking for our congressional leaders to kill, for the vice president of their own party to kill, to hang outside in gallows they constructed. We all know what would have happened if this had been a different kind of political group attacking the Capitol. They would have been machine gunned. Okay? There wouldn't have just been one person shot dead. We all know there would have been hundreds of people shot dead, especially if they were black rioters. We all know that's true.
And Jake,
so when this white,
go ahead, go ahead.
When this white Confederate flag guy says, "What are you going to do, shoot me?" Well, he's just telling you what we all know. In some respects, these right-wing radicals, these traitors, are basically above the law if they have enough money. If they're poor, they're going to go to prison. But if they're rich, I don't know if anything's going to happen to Donald Trump. Right. I'm still waiting.
Right. And Jake, the presence of the Confederate flag, among other things related to this story, especially problematic, right, as you say, bringing that symbol of racism into our nation's capital, in addition to the other comments you make, especially onerous and especially of concern. So we'll look forward to more of that kind of discussion right after this break here on Morning Canoe.
Hey, everybody. How we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all.
Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
My Shiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Sunny skies this afternoon with highs around 48. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows level off around 29 tonight. Mainly cloudy skies. High temperatures reach up to 48. Tomorrow, mainly sunny. Mid-40s Tuesday with a chance for scattered rain showers. Upper 40s Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
And we are back this morning in this first hour, talking a lot about the enforcement of law in America, the promotion of the rule of law. And again, I always appreciate our great callers calling in with insightful perspectives on those issues. Calvin and I, again, as we always do this morning, are taking your phone calls here at 844-967-2789. Let's talk more about January 6th right before the break, talking about this latest sentencing of one of the thousand of defendants who have been found guilty, a judge guilty, criminal judgments entered against them, felony prosecutions, misdemeanor prosecutions, and also, as we know well, two other major things going on. One of them, of course, these continuing trials of these mid-level, very, very concerning prosecutions of Proud Boys, Oath Keepers, Three Percenters, responsible for summoning into Washington, D.C., organizing conspiracies to take over the nation, to overthrow our government, charged with seditious conspiracy, getting convictions, the Department of Justice is, against the leadership of those, even as those trials continue. And we also know that as a third tranche, a third component of the Department of Justice response to what happened on January 6th, the first portion, again, these thousands of on-the-ground people breaking in, committing crimes there in our nation's capital. The second group, once again, organizing seditiously this conspiracy to overthrow government. A third focus upon the highest level of management, of supervision, of conspiracy to involve other people, to involve themselves in this attempt to overthrow our government. That being led by Jack Smith, who is the appointed special counsel through the Attorney General, Merrick Garland. We know he's also responsible for the Mar-a-Lago investigation. Footnote that right now. We're going to get back to that in just a moment or so. But we know some major news coming out of that component, this highest level of the investigation coming out of the news just this past week. And that involves our former vice president, whose name is Mike Pence. He has been subpoenaed by the special counsel, who again is investigating former President Trump's efforts to cling to office, to stay in office, to overthrow the results of the November election and remain in office after January 20th of 2021, after he lost that election in November. And again, Jack Smith, as a part of his very aggressive continuing oversight, his pursuit of matters related, the highest levels, if you will, of supervision, organization, control, direction, identifying plainly people who are responsible for making those decisions, including the former president, not exclusive to him, but including the former president, Donald Trump. So he has subpoenaed the vice president, arguably among the most significant stories of this past week. That is a subpoena to appear in front of, yes, that's right, a federal grand jury convened in Washington, D.C., right there along Pennsylvania Avenue in the federal courthouse there. Jack Smith plainly talking with a lot of people in front of the grand jury. This federal grand jury obviously collecting information. At some point, have to believe that there will be a presentation to this grand jury of some proposed indictments
charging people with these high-level involvements in January 6th. Why is this an important story that Jack Smith has decided to bring in, to summon in before the grand jury to provide testimony from the former vice president? Well, first of all, it is significant because if you think about it, this individual, our former Vice President Mike Pence, is probably one of the most important fact witnesses of all, right? We know from the past reporting, much of it verified by people in the public domain, that in the weeks, arguably the months ahead of January 6th, as Pence himself has said, he had many conversations with the president, the now former president, about whether or not he had the authority under the Constitution to overthrow, to overturn, to disregard the electoral votes presented by all the states to the Congress on January 6th. And he was in a dispute with President Trump about that. So lots of conversations. We know as well that there was a factual conversation, a very tumultuous conversation on the morning of January 6th before the Ellipse event itself, in which apparently the president called the vice president a wimp for his failure, his decision not to go ahead and not to try to disregard the proper electoral votes presented to him and then Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Lots of disagreements. So plainly lots of conversation, arguably even after January 6th. Why is that important? That's fact information, right? That's evidence of what the president said to him, what others may have said to him, and may also be in the focus of Jack Smith right now. All of that incredibly relevant information. And then, of course, the other reason why this fact information, this evidentiary basis that only Mike Pence can provide is also significant is that he was right there, right? He was in the Capitol building at the time of the insurrection. We saw those images as he and Nancy Pelosi and other members of the Congress were ushered out and brought into safe and secure areas. We know five people died that day as a result of this onslaught. Pence was there. Pence obviously having conversations. We know he was also engaged, unlike the president, in attempts to try to secure the Capitol and address this riot that was happening at the time. Plainly had conversations with many people in his own staff, some of whom have also testified before the grand jury. Certainly others who have testified before the January 6th committee. So Pence has a lot of on-site specific information about what was going on, quite literally, moment to moment, minute to minute, with Nancy Pelosi, with others, with security forces, with his own staff on that day. And so, while this is incredibly important information, it is unlikely, highly unlikely, that Vice President Pence is on a list of targets or subjects of this investigation. He could be, but more importantly, probably more likely, he is on the list of fact witnesses. And for that reason, this subpoena to him to come in and testify before the fact-finding federal grand jury, an all-important part of this, one could make the very legitimate argument, I will make it right now, that Mike Pence is at the top of the list in terms of people to whom you want to speak in investigating what happened on January 6th, and especially with this focus related to the people most responsible for it. Now, we also know, of course, that the president, the former president, and his lawyers are probably going to raise issues of executive privilege. It is possible that Mike Pence himself, through his lawyers, may do the same thing. And again, as we have talked in the past, executive privilege has a place in American jurisprudence. It does not generally cover, shield, prevent the disclosure of information and evidence that is about a criminal enterprise. Executive privilege should shield discussions that involve things of national security, domestic policy, environment, commerce, taxation, all those, immigration, other things like that. If you're engaging in criminal conduct, traditionally not an appropriate subject of an executive privilege invocation, but probably some disputes about that coming up, maybe in the courts, maybe Jack Smith is going to have to identify that and argue that in the court. We will continue to monitor this very important study of the grand jury and the subpoena issued in the times ahead. Stay with us for our second hour here this morning, February 11th, on Morning Cannolis. It's the only thing that there's just too little of what the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, oh, but just for every.
Hey, everybody. How we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. And it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.